This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Good afternoon and welcome to Washington Watch. Eben Fowler with Bot Radio Network sitting in today for Tony Perkins. The Twitter handle, at Eben Fowler, that's at EbenFowler. I tried that last time, and it was kind of fun. I got a couple of tweets back from people, and that was neat. Tony's is at T. Perkins, and the website you need to know about is frc.org, frc.org. Well, this week we saw President Trump push out round two of his travel ban executive order, or travel pause, as some call it, but for a few judges, it still wasn't satisfactory. Frank Gaffney, who's the founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., will join us here in just a moment to sort through the details. And can you believe that people are already talking about the 2018 midterm elections? Dr. Kelly Ward, a physician and former Arkansas state senator, will be here to talk about the issues that might be on the table. And rounding out the bottom of the hour, Marjorie Dannenfelser, president of the Susan B. Anthony List, will be on as we listen to one of the most compelling pro-life testimonies I've ever heard. You won't want to miss it. That's at the bottom of the hour. And then Marjorie will stay with us after the last break, and we'll be talking about the audio that you're going to hear. And we'll also possibly take some calls and questions if we have time. By the way, the audio that you're going to hear actually came yesterday on the Family Research Council daily email update. So you can go to frc.org and subscribe to that. Well, happy St. Patrick's Day to you. You know, if I was to talk in the accent of the Irish, it wouldn't be accurate because he didn't come from Ireland originally. You know, it's really good to I read a couple of interesting pieces that different people had written about St. Patty and who he really was. And the real story is much more compelling than the lightweight celebrations that we have now. I mean, he was a really interesting person. And I would encourage you to go learn more about him. That wasn't his name anyway. He was from the British Isle, I think England. I've heard one account that said Scotland. I'm not totally sure on that, but at any rate, look into who St. Patty really was. I think you'll be excited, and it is something to celebrate the work that he did. Well, a federal judge in Hawaii is keeping President Trump's travel ban from taking effect, but a federal judge in Seattle who blocked the first order says the new order is different enough to maintain the ban or the pause. With us now is Frank Gaffney. He's the founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C. Frank, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thanks. It's great to be with you.
Well, for our listeners who, you know, those who listen to Bot Radio Network, hear your features from now and then. Tell us what the Center for Security Policy is. What do you folks do?
We're an organization that I helped found back in 1988 to basically carry on what I learned working for President Ronald Reagan and his administration, namely the importance of the practice of peace through strength. And our organization, throughout these nearly 30 years, has been promoting that philosophy and trying to help people in government and the public, the media and others, understand that when you deviate from that tried and true policy approach, you generally get into trouble and people can be in jeopardy, including an awful lot of Americans. And I'm afraid that's where we've been for much of the past 15, 16 years at least.
Well, you know, it seems like human nature, when you've got a bully in the schoolyard, if you're weak, that bully is just going to come after you more and more. If you punch him in the nose once in a while, he tends to stay away. And I think that's kind of essentially what the peace through strength policy is. And if you boil it down to basic schoolyard jargon, that's what it's about. Tell us.
Well, just a small quibble.
Yeah.
Know, if you're powerful enough that he doesn't want to fool with you in the first place, you don't even have to punch him. You
know, that's right.
The fights don't take place. So that's more what we're thinking of.
I think, yeah.
As well as strength.
I grant you that. That's definitely better. Well, and we'll get into this, the travel pause, travel ban, whatever you want to call it here in just a moment. But first of all, give us a little bit of contrast, because you've been doing this for a while, and you did this through the Obama administration, in terms of their view of our military and this whole thing about strength. Compare what we've been through the last 8 years with what you're beginning to see now with this new administration. Is there a contrast? Silly question.
Oh, it's a stark contrast. It's early days, of course, for President Trump to actually deliver on the promises that he's made. But at the very least, what he has set out as his goals and what this so-called skinny budget suggests will be his execution of those promises is truly a world away from what President Obama was doing throughout his presidency. And I would describe that, to be absolutely frank, as a wrecking operation on our national security.
Well, yeah, you hear a lot about
especially.
You hear a lot about the readiness issues that we have in terms of our aircraft and the number of brigades that can be brought out quickly if there was a need for them.
Ships, planes, tanks, you name it. Everything has been taken down, as has the morale of the military, the social engineering that you talk a lot about on Tony's show, I know. It's one thing after another, and unfortunately it hasn't been confined to the military. It's been true as well with our law enforcement personnel and with our homeland security personnel and our intelligence personnel. There's been a dumbing down, in part through the insistence on not seeing, understanding, naming, let alone effectively countering the principal threat we face at the moment, which I would describe as Sharia supremacism, a totalitarian ideology that has got a patina of religion to it, but fundamentally it is about power, and it is about destroying countries like ours that don't conform, that don't submit to this Islamic doctrine they call Sharia.
Well, before we talk specifically about the judge in Hawaii, lay out for us why the original ban that President Trump signed as an executive order, how that would have helped us. You hear a lot of people argue, and they say, well, none of the terrorists who've done anything in the United States, whether it was Orlando or out in California or in Chattanooga or, look at the list, they claim none of these people came from those countries. They were, here in the country and radicalized or whatever. Tell us whether that's true or not.
Well, I don't think it is true. I believe that there have been well over a dozen different incidents in which individuals from one or the other of those six countries has been implicated in an act of terrorism. Some of them were instances in which they were prevented from actually carrying them out, but in some cases they actually were directly involved in trying to blow people up. I think here's the point. There is a basic common sense, as you said it yourself, to trying to prevent bad people from doing terrible things to us. The idea that you have to wait until they've done some of them to you in order to stop them from doing more of them to you is insane. I don't know anybody with a lick of sense who would make that argument. And unfortunately, the judge in this case, specifically the one in Hawaii, but frankly the others in Washington State and in the Ninth Circuit, have exhibited an indifference to common sense and national security. And in the process, by the way, they have infringed upon, they have undermined, they have actually tried to neuter the authority of the President of the United States, whose sworn duty is to protect us. I mean, this is not just folly. This is malfeasance, and it's likely to get people killed if it's not reversed.
Well, and I heard somebody reading, I think it's a statute that is in play here in terms of what the president's authority is, and it seemed very clear-cut to me that he can do this if he wants to. It's one of the powers that he has. Is that right?
It couldn't be more clear-cut. I mean, there's certain powers that are vested in him just as the commander-in-chief of the United States with the duty to protect us. But you're right. There is statutory authority as well that is about as sweeping, as essentially all-encompassing as you can imagine. Now, people may disagree with that law, but that is the law. And the reason it is the law is for that common sense, insight that I shared with you a moment ago. You want somebody who actually is informed about threats to our country to be in a position to decide whether we're going to admit more people who may well be associated with that threat. And one of the things that's different about the first version of this executive order from the second is that in the first, President Trump acted on a commitment he made back in Youngstown, Ohio, on the 15th of August of last year, which was to say he was going to stop letting into the country people who don't share our values. And that goes back to the point I made a moment ago, Evan, about this idea of Sharia supremacism. If you embrace this notion that God makes laws, men don't, and women must be treated like cattle or property, and homosexuals must be killed, and Jews are to be, you know, murdered, and on and on. If that is your program, you do not share our values. And we don't, frankly, need more of those people in our country. That was explicitly envisioned and stated as one of the things that was going to be done in the first version of this. In the second version, any reference to that idea that, you know, we're going to be screening people to share our values has been removed. That may be one of the reasons why the guy in the court in Washington State thinks it's okay now. But there's a guy, get this, there's a guy in Hawaii who is a Sharia supremacist. He's the imam of the big Muslim Brotherhood mosque in Hawaii. And he has been denied the privilege of bringing his mother-in-law from Syria for a 90-day period, and he's claiming that he has been irreparably harmed as a result, and therefore the entire state of Hawaii has insisted that the court must interfere with the president's ability to protect us. This is insane, well, and you know, I hope it will be overturned soon.
Depending, Frank, on the mother-in-law, it could be a benefit to him.
Well, I don't want to go there, but just one of the things that might seem wrong to a lot of people whose mother-in-laws are a problem. But anyway, the point is, this whole thing strains credulity, that we're going to keep us at risk of more people who share this supremacist doctrine of Sharia at the insistence of one guy who's already here and is promoting it in the state of Hawaii. I just can't get my head around it.
Well, Frank, in about a little bit less than a minute that we have here, we want to make sure that you let our listeners know about a website that you have set up where they can get more information about this issue and also what kind of action they can take.
Thank you, Evan. This is actually a project that I'm supporting rather than responsible for, but I just want to commend to your listeners, if they feel as I do, that President Trump is right and we want him to be able to keep harmful, dangerous people out of the country, and we want his executive order enforced, to go to immigrationpause.org and join a petition, sign up, get information about this, find out more about how you can help and be part of the effort to really secure America. If we don't, we won't make it great again, that's for sure.
Okay, immigrationpause.org. Frank Gaffney, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy, thanks so much for your time today. We appreciate the work that you're doing there on behalf of all of America. Well, when we come back, we'll be talking about the 2018 midterm elections with Dr. Kelly Ward. Stick with us here on Washington Watch.
When governments authorize abortion, do abortions in that country decrease? Many argue that abortion should be safe, legal, and rare, as if rarity depends upon safety and legality. We now have nearly a century of evidence documenting what happens when governments authorize abortion. It does not become rare, but increases exponentially. Indeed, in less than 100 years, abortion has become the greatest Holocaust ever, far surpassing all wars and genocide combined. The Abortion Worldwide Report is the first to systematically track reported abortions in 100 nations, territories, and regions from the year of authorization through 2015. The principal authors of the Abortion Worldwide Report are William Robert Johnston and Thomas Jacobson, who compiled the data and information in the report over the last 32 and 14 years, respectively. Their research has revealed that over 1 billion babies have been aborted in 100 nations since 1920. Visit frc.org/university to view this policy discussion.
These days, health insurance is incredibly expensive, especially if you don't have coverage through your employer. If you're concerned about the costs or the ethical dilemmas of insurance, here's great news. There's an affordable, God-honoring alternative. It's called MediShare. Unlike insurance, MediShare is a Christian healthcare sharing community whose members share each other's medical expenses. It's about half the cost of insurance, and it's fully acceptable under the law. Best of all, you never pay for things that go against your beliefs. If you're a Christian looking for a truly affordable healthcare solution, MediShare is just what the doctor ordered.
Learn how thousands of Christians can help you save on your healthcare. For your free information guide, call 855-PSALM-23. Not available in Montana. MediShare, affordable biblical healthcare. Call 855-PSALM-23. That's 855-PSALM-23.
From Samaritan's Purse and Franklin Graham comes Facing Darkness. In 2014, as the Ebola virus was devastating West Africa,
the numbers of new cases and deaths are still rising.
International relief organization Samaritan's Purse stepped up.
God has called us to care for the dying, to care for those that are suffering.
We can't say we're Samaritan's Purse and not help.
My phone rang. One of our doctors, Kent Brantley, has Ebola.
And then David looked at me and he said, "You too have Ebola."
We're there to save life. We're there in your name. Why?
Despite the fact that things were out of control, we knew that God was in control.
God puts you in places and supplies the strength to deal with.
Jesus Christ didn't run. We run to the fire, we don't run away from it.
Facing Darkness, a true story of faith. In select cinemas for one night only, Thursday, March 30th. For theaters and tickets, go to facingdarknessmovie.com. That's facingdarknessmovie.com.
St. Patrick's Day edition of Washington Watch. Eben Fowler with Bot Radio Network sitting in for Tony Perkins today. Political pundits and commentators are already talking about the 2018 midterm elections, just when you thought it was all over, right? Will Republicans fare as well as they have in recent elections and maintain their majority in the House and Senate? Joining us now is Dr. Kelly Ward. She's a doctor and former Arizona, and I said that wrong earlier. I said Arkansas, Arizona State Senator. Kelly, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hey, Evan. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Well, you know, it's hard to believe, but the 2018 midterms are going to be here before we know it. What issues do you think are going to be on the table, and how do you think it's going to impact the elections, particularly with respect to Republicans?
It is funny that the political season never seems to end. You know, we just finished this big political presidential election, and now we're already talking about 2018, and I think things look great for Republicans in the future. We got Donald Trump into the White House. We don't know how that's going to play out for Republicans. Right now it looks very, very good because he's putting conservative policies into place, or putting the processes into place to bring those conservative policies to fruition. I think the big things that are going to be on the table, you know, right now we're looking at health care, the repeal of Obamacare. Hopefully that's going to be complete, but, you know, things move slowly in Washington, so that could still be on the table. I think immigration and border security are also going to be at the top of people's minds. They sure are here in Arizona, being a border state. The economy, making sure that our economy starts to grow. Under Barack Obama, we were dismal with growth at 1.2 to 1.3% per year. We need to be at a 4% growth rate so that prosperity across the board occurs. I think that those are going to be some of the big things that are playing into who gets elected in 2018.
Well, let's take a look at a couple of those issues. First of all, you're a physician, so give us your take on what's going on with the repeal and replace efforts that are going on in D.C. What's your take on it? Where do you think it is? Where do you think it should go?
I have been a little disappointed with the repeal and replace. I have been known to call it as rhino care, repeal in name only care right now with the way that we started out. I would have loved to have seen the first iteration of the bill to be the same thing that was passed in 2015, that passed the House and passed the Senate, but was vetoed by Barack Obama. You know, in 2010, we, the American people, gave the House to the Republicans, and they told us they were going to repeal Obamacare. But then they said, well, we've got to have the Senate, too. So in 2014, we delivered the Senate. And then we heard, oh, but we just have to have the White House if we want to get anything done. And now we've got the White House, the Senate, and the House. And what we're getting from Republicans, especially mainstream establishment, longtime politician Republicans, are excuses. All we're getting are excuses. Well, I have to say that the era of excuses is over. We expect full repeal, and we expect those conservative policies to be put in place to let the free market work, to lower the cost of health care for everyone across the board.
Well, you know, this is so important, and it's really important that they get it right. Paul Ryan's bill, and some people have dubbed it Ryan Care, or the bill that seems to be the one that he is putting forward. There are lots of comments from the Freedom Caucus, which is the block of more conservative House members, House Republicans, and they've portrayed this thing as really not getting the job done. What's your view?
Yeah, I agree wholeheartedly. I think that there are too many mandates, too many taxes, and too many subsidies that still remain in the bill that's been originally created or presented. Now, I do see a glimmer of hope on the horizon. I think that the conservative viewpoint is being taken into account and actually is being put into that bill. I certainly hope that the Republicans are not going to shove Obamacare light down the throats of the American people the way Barack Obama and the Democrats did whenever it originally passed. So I think that there is, you know, they are listening. I think that the president is listening, and I hope that the final product is actually much, much more conservative, much more free market than what we've seen as the original.
Well, you know, I heard Paul Ryan, a little sound clip from him just the other day where it sounded like he was just real, real interested in working with the president and hearing from, you know, different sides. This is kind of like the old sausage factory thing. You know, you like the end product. Well, hopefully we will like the end product here. But the process of getting it made is none too pretty. And, you know, maybe we're not used to real debate because, as you said, the original Obamacare bill, it was voted on only by Democrats. It was passed in the middle of the night. And the most ridiculous quote probably in political history was Nancy Pelosi's, where she says, well, we're going to have to pass it before we can see what's in it. That's idiotic. It should be the other way around. And there should be plenty of time for everybody to take a look at it. Not everybody's going to be happy with it. The Democrats are going to be fighting it, even if it was the best thing in the world. And I heard Donald Trump say this in an interview just the other day. If it was the best thing in the world and it was perfect and gold-plated and beautiful, they wouldn't support it anyway.
Exactly right. So there's no point for us to try to placate the Democrats, who are the ones who are saying, oh, you're going to drop millions off of their insurance plans and people are going to be dying in the street. This is simply hogwash. It is untrue. It's designed to tug at the heartstrings of the American people, and we actually have to get something in place so that people get actual health care rather than just having a piece of paper that promises something that we haven't been able to deliver.
Well, you know, the figure that you kind of quoted there came from the Congressional Budget Office, and they've been way, way off on a lot of things anyway, so we really can't take, too much of what they say to heart. We've got about 30 seconds left here. Very quickly, if you would, your comment being in a border state on where we are on immigration, and 30 seconds, if you would.
Oh, yes. You know, border security is national security. Donald Trump is putting forward policies that are designed to protect the American people and the American homeland, whether it's his recent executive order on immigration and travel, which I think was constitutional and legal, or his plan to build the wall. All of those things are going to be put in place to put America first and to make America safe again, and I'm in support of those policies.
Well, very good. Dr. Kelly Ward, thank you so much for taking the time today, and we'll hopefully talk with you again about this and other situations and other issues. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks, Evan. Thanks.
Coming up next, we have a compelling audio clip, and I mean compelling, of a young woman's experience at a Planned Parenthood clinic. And Marjorie Dannenfelser, president of the Susan B. Anthony List, will be on board here to listen to that audio with us, comment on it. We'll talk about it, and then we'll take your questions. You're listening to Washington Watch. This is Eben Fowler with Bot Radio Network sitting in again this Friday for Tony Perkins. Glad to have you along. Stick around. You will not want to miss this next segment.
Making the most of your money. Here's Dan Celia.
One of the questions I get often is about long-term care insurance. Long-term care insurance is the idea of insuring the cost that you would have if you were to go into a skilled nursing facility, a nursing home at some point in time in your life. It is a wonderful product and is sold by most insurance companies. And it is a product in which you pay every month. And if you should ever need it, they will pay a certain amount to you or to a nursing home for your daily expenses. But I do want to point out a couple of things. Oftentimes, we don't buy enough benefit. We might buy a $100 a day benefit when the cost is going to be $150 a day. We may also buy a product without an inflation rider protection. So though you buy it today and you buy a $150 benefit, by the time you use it 20 years from now, it may be $250. So you need that to go up with inflation. It is a great product, but it isn't for everybody. And it is very expensive, but it can be made cheaper, less expensive, by eliminating some of the benefits. So you've got to be very careful about how you purchase those kinds of plans. Again, it is a great product, but remember, you're insuring a risk that you may never have. And remember that it is going to be a monthly payment that you're going to have to pay for the rest of your life in order to ever have the opportunity to use this benefit should you get into that difficult situation.
Want to hear more financial advice from Dan Celia? Then look for his podcast when you visit the website afr.net.
Welcome back, you all, listening to Washington Watch on Bot Radio Network, American Family Radio, and elsewhere. And we're glad that you are listening today. Well, a recent video released by Apologia Studios and shared in yesterday's Family Research Council daily email tells of a woman being raped, becoming pregnant, and going to the place that she had been told all her life to go when seeking help with an unplanned pregnancy, and that is Planned Parenthood. Let's listen to Summer White as she tells her story.
I was raised by my grandparents because I was abandoned by my mother, who chose her career before her child. I am an atheist. I am one of the 1 in 40 who was raped on campus, and it resulted in a pregnancy that I didn't want. As a scared 19-year-old student, I turned to the one place that I had been told my whole life that I could turn to, Planned Parenthood. Surely they would provide the services I required, like ultrasounds and references to adoption agencies and the counseling that I so desperately needed. That's not what I found. The clinic was comfortable and even beautiful. I filled out the paperwork indicating that I was pregnant but wanted adoption resources, just like they so proudly show on television. When I returned the application, everything changed. I waited in the waiting area for over an hour. I was basically looked over and ignored. When I was finally called in, they brought me into an examination room and the nurse came in to explain to me the procedure of abortion and how safe it was. I told her I didn't want an abortion, I wanted information for adoption resources. She then sat down and asked me the circumstances around my pregnancy and I told her about it. She kept telling me about my rights, about how empowered I would feel, how I would be taking control of my own body and taking back what had been taken from me. I politely told her that I understood, but I still wanted to carry the child to term. They wouldn't offer me an ultrasound. Counseling was only for those getting an abortion. When I asked for references to adoption agencies, I was ignored and essentially held captive until I changed my mind. She eventually got impatient with me and told me about some statistics that children conceived through rape were more likely to be drug users and rapists themselves, that babies conceived from rape are harder to adopt, that no one would want my baby, then she turned and left. They wanted to give me time to think it over, alone, in a room surrounded by inspirational posters about being free of the burden. I was alone in that room for over an hour crying, nearly convinced that abortion was the humane thing to do. When someone finally came back, I told them that I would need to think about it, and I left with a bag full of information about abortion, a month's supply of condoms, and oral birth control. When I left, I filed a complaint with Planned Parenthood. I never heard back. As I was leaving, I was given a pamphlet to a Christian pregnancy crisis center by a boy who was maybe 8 years old. Where I found real love and compassion was at the Christian Pregnancy Crisis Center. They literally saved my life. They told me that, of course, I would be able to find a family willing to adopt the child. I was given an ultrasound, appropriate counseling, and they even accommodated my request for a non-religious counselor, as well as resources to adoption agencies. They called me on a regular basis. They helped me find a doctor. I had picked a family to adopt her just a week before I had the miscarriage, and when they learned what had happened, they named her Hope. After the miscarriage, one of the ultrasound techs from the Christian Center came to visit me at the hospital, and they provided all of my postnatal care. I have not told my story to a lot of people because I'm shy, and there was a long time where talking about it brought me a lot of tears, but it actually is easier now. When I talk about my daughter, feminists get very offended that I call her my daughter because it invokes a sense of personhood. So I guess the last thing I want people to know is if you're standing outside abortion clinics giving out pamphlets and you're not sure if it's really worth it, know that it is.
Wow. Wow. Powerful, powerful stuff. Marjorie Dannenfelser, president of the Susan B. Anthony List, is joining us on the line. Marjorie, what did you think about that?
Wow.
Yeah, yeah.
Sorry. I've been doing this for a lot of years. And, you know, truly, in the eye of the storm in a lot of ways. And, you know, partners with Tony and all the senators that we've helped elect and the president of the United States and the vice president who are great allies, nothing ever should eliminate the freshness of this issue. I mean, it really is. It is exactly what she said, and the unfairness to young women and the human rights violation that it is to their children and to our children.
That's right.
Has depraved our nation. So that's my reaction.
Well, and Marjorie, we're going to be back. We're going to be back after the break, Marjorie, with much more. We'll kind of break down what we just heard in more detail, and we're going to talk about this whole issue of funding, defunding Planned Parenthood, and why that's important, and why it's important that we take the mask off this organization that's trying to prop up its image here before the American people, because there's a lot of money at stake. And we'll be back to take your phone calls as well. The number is 866-372-7234. 866-372-7234. Back right after this break with Marjorie Dannenfelser and more on Washington Watch.
Whoa, we have not had a response like this before. Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association and American Family Radio. We've been doing these spiritual heritage tours for like 20 years. We're sold out for June already, if you can believe that. We've got space left on our September tours of Washington, D.C. and Mount Vernon, and then Williamsburg, Jamestown, and Yorktown. We call them spiritual heritage tours, and I don't know how long these September seats will last. To what do you attribute that to, someone might ask? Maybe it's the fact that we have a new person occupying the White House. Maybe that has something to do with it. But in any event, we welcome you to come with us on our September Spiritual Heritage Tour of Washington, D.C. and Mount Vernon and Williamsburg, Jamestown, and Yorktown. Those are two separate trips. You can do both, or you can do one or the other. We'd love to have you. Go to spiritualheritagetours.com. spiritualheritagetours.com.
Join Norman Geisler, Richard Land, Michael Brown, Frank Turek, and others for Southern Evangelical Seminary's National Conference on Christian Apologetics. It's October 13th and 14th in Charlotte, North Carolina. Enjoy informative talks, a live debate, and a dialogue with Ken Ham from Answers in Genesis. Plus, there's the premiere of the American Family Association documentary, The God Who Speaks. Register by May 1st and receive a special gift. Visit ses.edu for details.
Physicians keep learning after medical school in order to better save lives. Shouldn't Christian leaders keep learning to better save souls? Hi, I'm Dr. John Nyhoff, president of Wesley Biblical Seminary in Jackson, Mississippi, and online around the world. Are you a Christian leader who thinks it's important to keep learning? WBS online weekend and evening classes allow graduate students to become better equipped to make disciples in a constantly changing world. For more information, visit wbs.edu.
Dan Celia of Financial Issues.
You know, there's probably never been a more important time in our economy to be thinking about a charitable gift annuity. I hope you'll do that just to shore up, to firm up some more income, permanent income, income that you can count on for the rest of your life while you're doing the Lord's work. A charitable gift annuity has been something I've been talking about for 25 years. Finally, we're seeing even mainstream start to get on board with the merits of charitable gift annuities. I hope you'll consider it. You can call the AFA Foundation. Someone there will help you work through the details and find out whether you qualify for a charitable gift annuity.
Call and speak with a representative of the AFA Foundation at 800-326-4543, extension 345.
Listening to Washington Watch on Bot Radio Network and American Family Radio. Eben Fowler with Bot Radio Network sitting in today, this Friday, this St. Patrick's Day, for Tony Perkins, and glad to do so. On the line is Marjorie Dannenfelser. She's the president of the Susan B. Anthony List. And Marjorie, let me toss out a couple observations that I have about what we heard before the break in that very compelling clip of audio. And then I'd like to hear your comments as well. And then we can... There are a lot of different directions we can go here, you know, assuming we have a little bit of time. The first thing that impressed me as I heard that was that Planned Parenthood says they're one thing, but they're something else entirely. They say that they're there to help women and for women's health, and that's the big thing that they've been talking about is how we're providing women's health. And, you know, you can't take $500 million of taxpayer money away from us because then we won't be able to do all the great things we do. The second thing that, and of course, you know, the young lady that we heard pretty well put to rest any claims of compassion there. They're compassionate when it comes to performing abortions,
right.
But that's not compassionate, of course. That's a infant homicide. The other thing is that I heard was that this young lady apparently she talked about an 8-year-old boy who handed to her a piece of literature from a crisis pregnancy center, and that is what connected her with some people who really did care about helping her in the ways that she needed help. So that's kind of what my takeaway was. How about you?
Yeah, my takeaway was her innocence about what Planned Parenthood was being set aside, that this would be a place that you could go when you're truly in crisis, you're truly in trouble, no matter what your views are. She's an atheist. I thought that was really interesting. And that they would be a refuge, because it's Planned Parenthood of all people. They have a great PR. They have a great PR machine. And that when she got there, she found out that so many of the obfuscations that they have... put out there in the legislative arena have been proved to be untrue.
that, and they're proved to be untrue in her personal experience. And what is that? Number one, that they are anything about Planned Parenthood other than abortion. They are the number one abortion provider in the nation. They are number one advocate for abortion in the nation. Their business model is dependent upon abortion. And 10 out of 100 people that go into a Planned Parenthood facility come out with anything other than an abortion plan. In other words, they're only set up for abortion. That's what you heard from her, that this person who, you know, came at it from a very human perspective, not with the benefit of faith that we all have. She was so brave and so courageous. She didn't have the benefit of faith, but she had the benefit of being a human being created by God in his image, and she had a plan for her child. And they told her that this child that was conceived in rape, no one would want. That is such a lie.
Big lie.
The lies, it's such a lie. And so I think that we're in the middle of this debate right now, and for the first time in 40 years of government funding of abortion, the lies that they continue to repeat are being exposed. And they are really on the ropes. They are truly on the ropes. They're on the verge of defunding, and it will kill their business. Not forever, but maybe they will.
Marjorie, let's talk about some of those lies. I understand that last week that National Public Radio interviewed the head of Planned Parenthood, Cecile Richards, and then the next day they interviewed you. Tell us about that experience.
Yes, so that was the idea, because I actually think in some areas, only in abortion actually, for some reason, I think culturally, they've come around to the idea that millennial women were divided, okay? So they're pretty fair. So first day was Cecile Richards doing an interview about the whole issue of her organization being dismantled, and she told her story. And the next day, I was interviewed in the same to counter everything that she said, and with a great benefit. And what were the things that she said? She said, I mean, there were such blatant out and out lies that honestly, it was easy. It made it very easy. She's very Planned Parenthood is used to not being countered. She said that there's no. And even Paul Ryan, the Speaker of the House's district, there is no place, if Planned Parenthood is defunded, that a woman could go to get help in any situation. In any situation, meaning healthcare in general. It's just a bald-faced lie. And I listed all the organizations that for poor people to go that they could go in that instance. And then the second, you know, it was maternal mortality. She claimed that because Planned Parenthood exists, abortions have gone down. Well, the truth is, in the years that she's talking about, Planned Parenthood have been closed down as maternal mortality has been preserved. So she's claiming that children are being saved by Planned Parenthood, which on the face of it is false. And then the last thing was that in Texas, she takes credit for lowering the abortion rate in Texas, and in fact she uses a year that was previous to when abortion clinics were closed down to prove that somehow women are being saved in Texas. So she takes credit for lowering the abortion rates, and yet in Texas the rates went down as the abortion clinics closures went up. It was just fact after fact after fact was exposed, and they're really on the ropes right now. That's really where they are.
Well, I think one of the big things that she's afraid of is, you know, she makes close to $1 million a year. She makes an awful lot of money at Planned Parenthood, and you know, $500 million of taxpayer money. You know, who knows where her salary specifically comes from, but I doubt they'd be able to pay her quite as much if that funding was taken away. I want to take some of our calls here, if we could, Marjorie, and have you weigh in. I've got Mark on the line from Georgia. Mark, thanks for joining us today on Washington Watch. What's your comment?
All right, I'm going to talk about funding, defunding Planned Parenthood. Now, this has been adjudicated already in another area. I'm going to talk about two areas quickly and try to be concise and then tie them together. Planned Parenthood claims they should keep receiving federal money because they don't directly spend federal dollars on abortions. Okay, so therefore they should keep getting funding. Now, in the 90s, I'm a high school football coach, athletic director, and I keep up with the Title IX judgments. Title IX is equality in sports, for people who don't know. And the laws have been on the books since 1972. But in the 90s, with liberal federal judges making decisions, high schools across the country claimed that they were spending correctly because they didn't spend exact number of dollars on boys and girls sports. So people brought judgments against them claiming that they were in violation of Title IX. Now, here's the point. High schools claimed for years that we don't get federal money for athletics. We don't get federal dollars to spend directly on athletics. Therefore, we are immune to that ruling. But the judges said no, and here's the key point they made. The judges said because athletics are under the umbrella, the key phrase they used, are under the umbrella of education, which does receive federal dollars, therefore the schools have to follow the Title IX rule, and they've got to have expenditures equalized. Okay? Now, go back to Planned Parenthood. Planned Parenthood claims that they don't spend the money directly. But the abortions and the procedures in that department are under the umbrella of Planned Parenthood.
Right.
Therefore, the same judgment should apply. I wonder why that's not been brought up.
Well, Mark, thanks for your call. Marjorie, what do you think?
Yeah, I think the point that you make is very astute. It's exactly the point that we make on the Senate floor, on the House floor, and the in fact, Vice President Pence has made this point many times that, and any business understands, if you have a business with many entities, which many do, and certainly Planned Parenthood does, when you have government funding for an entire entity of that business, then you can shift, you can figure out how to make the rest of it work. The fungibility of money in a business makes total sense. Everybody who's run a business understands that. The umbrella is the key thing. Like, you have the umbrella organization. Look at it this way. If Planned Parenthood can't build facilities, they can't perform abortions. They build facilities with our money. If they couldn't do that, there would be no abortions. So it's ridiculous to claim that somehow government funding, our money, doesn't go to each abortion when we're building the facility and we're paying the doctor and we're doing all the things that would lead to the death of one child.
That's right. Well, you know, fungible is the word of the day. If you don't know what it means, look it up. And I want to take another call here. Tracy is on the line from Texas. Tracy, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hello. Yes. I just want to say I had an experience with Planned Parenthood a few years ago, and wasn't quite as dramatic or traumatic as the lady that had that video. But, you know, I even remember using the words my daughter because I just knew that baby was a girl. And, but, God be glory, she's 18 years old today. I can't believe it, the day before it's supposed to happen. And it's just, but she's right. They're just so cold, and you just feel like cattle being herded through this thing, and I just think that we need to do more to try to get this defunded. I don't know what we can do, but I'm all for demolishing Planned Parenthood.
Well, Tracy, thank you so much. And Marjorie, that leads to a question that I wanted to ask, and that is, you know, we're talking about all this stuff. What can our listeners do to help push this effort along? I think we've convinced everybody that Planned Parenthood does not need our taxpayer dollars to do the stuff they do. So what's the most effective action that our listeners can take?
The most effective action anybody could take right now would be to contact your senator and your congressman on this issue. no matter whether you think they're already with you or you think they're not with you, they need to hear this. This is the top priority item in whether the Obamacare bill will pass and whether Planned Parenthood will be defunded in the coming weeks. This is the moment to really do that. If you care at all, even a little bit, now is the time to pick up the phone and call your member of Congress and your senator. It's really easy. Those phone numbers, I'm sure you give out all the time, but the House number is 202-225-3121, and then you can just ask for your House member. And the Senate number is 202-225-4121. It's very easy to call.
That's right.
And they actually care. They actually respond.
They do. They pay attention to the phone call statistics. So I'd encourage everybody listening, you know, if you care about this issue, you know, maybe if you've never, ever called your senators or your representative's office before, this would be a real good time to do that. So I'd encourage you to do that. Let's try to take one more call here. We're just about out of time, Marjorie. Preston is calling from Nebraska. Preston, have just about a minute if you could make your comments brief.
Yes, sir. Thanks for taking my call. I just had a comment on the story we heard recently. I think that often is the case. I remember hearing a study a while back, I think on this radio station, about some undercover things they had done with Planned Parenthood, asking for prenatal care, and it was never the case where it was actually available. They only did abortion. But my question for you and your guests would be, going forward, what are you guys feeling like? Are you hopeful for the future? I know that Donald Trump has said he's going to appoint Supreme Court Justice, who is pro-life, and obviously Mike Pence is very supportive. So I wanted to know what you guys thought about that.
Thank you, Preston. Marjorie, you know, just about a minute or two, give us your thoughts on his question, and then I want to make sure before we wrap up that we provide our listeners with your website.
So the answer to that question is very helpful. We, the pro-life movement, Susan B. Anthony List, Family Research Council, and others, really embedded the four principles in all of our election activities. And those four principles have now been leveraged into legislation. It's where the president and the Senate and the House know where the real action is, and what is that? It is to nominate only pro-life Supreme Court nominees, to defund Planned Parenthood, to embed the Hyde Amendment with no taxpayer funding of abortion principle into all law, and to enact a 20-week ban on abortion. That is so part of the DNA now of the executive branch and the Senate and the House, that it is part of the constant conversation, and it is embedded again in the grassroots, because it was so part of getting out the vote at that time. So what I'm really motivated and excited about it is that we're actually debating now for the first time since Roe versus Wade. Almost all of those are on the table right now, right out of the beginning of this administration. It's a moment of great hope with great potential, and prayer is really needed. And I mean, honestly, can we imagine that Planned Parenthood would be on the ropes?
Yeah, it's great. That? And Marjorie, we are just about out of time. Give us your website, and then we'll be done today.
Yep, it's just Google Susan B. Anthony List. It's easy to find, and we'll help you get engaged. Thank you so much.
Well, Marjorie, thanks so much for your time today. Marjorie Dannenfelser, president of the Susan B. Anthony List. This is Evan Fowler sitting in for Tony Perkins on this edition of Washington Watch.
Ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council. Visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.